I'm Matt Bush with BPR News. I'm speaking with Dr. Chris Cooper. He's the head of the Political Science Department at Western Carolina University. Chris, as always, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, great to be here.
That these are sort of the bills that this was a bill that got through very quickly in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. A lot of this really has to do with next year, correct?
That's right. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Obviously, this is kind of red meat for the base in a lot of ways. Obviously, everybody knows about the long history of abortion fights in this country. You've got one party that tends to be pro-choice. You've got one party that tends to be pro-life. Both are pretty firm in their positions. And I think this is both sides are essentially offering this up as a reminder to the voters of where they stand on this contentious issue.
Be far from the only time we're going to see this, though, in this particular General Assembly session this year and then into next year's as well. We're going to see a lot of this sort of stuff, right?
No, that's right. I think we hear a lot about national polarization and how sort of stalemated Congress is. We see the exact same thing here in our General Assembly and throughout the states. I mean, both parties have kind of firm positions on these things. It is a very, very polarized environment. North Carolina has one of the most polarized legislatures in the entire country. So I would expect that we're going to see more fights like this. I would expect that we're going to see more of Cooper's vetoes and more of this question about what happens afterwards.
So looking at some of the bills that have been filed, it seems like it's just a lot of party priorities. On the Republican side, we've seen some abortion bills. We've seen some expanding Medicaid, but not the way that's done under the Affordable Care Act. Whereas on the Democratic side, there's been bills about raising the minimum wage and approving the Equal Rights Amendment. Mm-hmm. Things that probably really don't have a chance of passing, given how we're stalemated in North Carolina. But again, this really speaks to 2020, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think a whole lot of this speaks to 2020. I think the Medicaid expansion one is kind of interesting, right? Because some folks do see it as a compromise. Essentially, you've got Republicans that say, hey, we want something that looks kind of like Medicaid expansion, but please don't call it that. And it's got some differences and some kind of requirements for the folks who would be on the receiving end. But at the same time, a whole lot of people would be able to get health insurance that don't currently have it. And so you've got some Republicans who are for it. Some say, hey, this is just Medicaid expansion under a different name. And then you see some of the same things on the Democratic side. So that one, I think, is one that we could see kind of an outcome that actually becomes policy going forward. The rest of them, I think you're right. They're more likely to be stalemates.
How much of what is happening right now will be remembered, not just by those who are running for office next year, but by voters next year who will be deciding who wins running for office? How much of what was happening right now, you know, 18 months before the election is going to get remembered?
Probably very little. I think the politicians are going to try to remind us of this. I think both sides, obviously, on this sort of key abortion vote are going to remind us of it. But this is not the kind of thing that most voters are going to remember. For the most part, too, these bills, with the potential exception of the Medicaid expansion, are things that both parties already kind of own, right? We already think, hey, the Democrats tend to be the party that supports education and the minimum wage, and the Republican Party is the party that is opposed to abortion and is for more fiscal responsibility. And so most of these bills kind of already fall in that what we call issue ownership that each party already has.
North Carolina, obviously a very purple state, and it's going to be a battleground in 2020 for the presidential race. You've been looking at sort of what's been going on. Again, we're so far ahead of everything in for the 2020 presidential race, but you've been sort of looking about, particularly on the Democratic side, with the candidates who have announced that they're going to run against President Trump or to seek the nomination to face President Trump, the sort of their geographic breakdown, and talk to us about that.
Yeah, so we got about 18 folks running for Democratic side for president. I'll say about 18 because there's still a few we're trying to figure out if they're officially running or not. But of those that are running, there's just three that are from the South. Okay, so two from Texas and one from Florida. So we can sort of jokes aside about whether those fall in the South. I think this is a pretty important trend, right? So the Republican side last time had about 40% of the folks from the South. So I think it really shows the regional breakdown and partisanship in this country. And I think it points a little bit to one of the Democrats' problems, right? The South is an extremely populous area of the country. It's extremely important when it comes for presidential elections. But the Democratic Party seems to have a candidate recruitment problem in the South. And I think that may be getting worse over time, not better.
There is an argument to say, though, in response to that, that a lot of the states within the Southeast that you're talking about outside, where, again, we will take Texas and Florida out of the equation here, and people can judge, you know, how they wish to on that. But there are states like North Carolina and like Georgia that are very purple states, and Virginia has gone towards Democrats in the last few elections. So how does that fit together, that Democrats are ignoring this, at least in the people who are running for president, as you're saying, but there are purple states. These are purple states in many ways.
They are purple states, and I think this is a problem the Democratic Party is going to have to deal with. Obviously, this is just one sign. It's very early, as you said. We're just talking about, you know, just a sample of 18 folks. But the fact that we can't get more folks from the South on the Democratic side says the Democratic Party isn't building a farm team, right? In the same way that the Asheville Tourist exists in a lot of ways to go ahead and get folks to the Rockies eventually, you think lower offices, you're going to have kind of a farm team that gets folks into the big leagues. And we're seeing that isn't really working on the Democratic side, despite the fact, as you said, that North Carolina, Virginia, Florida, and to some degree Georgia, I think, are states that really could go either way.
Chris Cooper, thank you as always for coming in.
Yeah, great to see you, Matt.